You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 7th of July 2022 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at RadioAlbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Well, you know, I have a two-month-old kitten and I have to warn you that she really, really, really likes my microphone cord. So if anything weird happens, blame her.
I think we're quite used to sounds from cats and kittens and dogs and all sorts on your podcast by now, Matt. Hopefully she will behave herself for the podcast, but thank you for the warning anyway. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about China and Afghanistan and the United States and China getting bolder and bolder in calling out the big bully that is the United States. The same kind of planes the US used for its chaotic withdrawal from war-torn Afghanistan, China is now deploying to deliver supplies for rebuilding the country's province stricken by a major earthquake, a spokesman of the Foreign Ministry in Beijing pointed out on Twitter on Friday. Similar transport planes, different missions in Afghanistan, Zhao Lijian tweeted. He accompanied that with a screenshot captioned in English, US planes took people out after destruction. Chinese planes brought relief supplies in for reconstruction. One of the images is the iconic photo of the US C-17 Globe Master III attempting to take off from Kabul in August 2021, surrounded by desperate Afghans trying to cling on. On the bottom is a photo of the Chinese Xi'an Y-20 transport delivering pallets of aid last week. Zhao's still appears similar to a video circulating in China and contrasting the relief effort with the US scramble to leave Afghanistan in August 2021 as the Taliban took power in Kabul and the US-backed government melted away. So it does seem as if China is now fulfilling this role of delivering aid to countries that need it and now stepping forward to embarrass the United States for not doing so. What is going on here, Matt?
Well, China understand that it is the largest economy in the world and has substantial military power based not on mercenary motives but on actual patriotism. Beneath the surface, though, remember, when the U.S. Either invades or dislikes or has a problem with the country, its primary goal is to steal their reserves, financial reserves. They took about they took several billion out of Afghanistan. They did this, got 40 billion out of Libya. And of course, now stealing whatever Russia had abroad. It's the reason why no one trusts them and no one takes it seriously. But this Afghanistan as a country can't get a break. They've been torn by war since the 70s, if not earlier. The U.S. steals everything that's not nailed down there. And now a giant earthquake. It's no matter what, you know, they can't seem to get a break. It's a miracle that they have any economy at all whatsoever. And of course, the American treatment of it is once they suck everything out of it they possibly can, they cast her aside. And of course, China, not quite being like that, is doing the exact opposite. And everyone, it sounds like almost like a funny, a mocking kind of a story. But it's not an accident. The world is noticing that while the U.S. destroys, China rebuilds. And there's not really enough of an economy for the U.S. to finance reconstruction. The Chinese have built about 3,000 schools over the last few years, the exact same schools that the U.S. has destroyed. And I think that the only group that can actually rebuild Afghanistan is the Taliban. because they have the popularity, they have the legitimacy because they won the war. I mean, there's nothing like defeating a major colonial power to cement you in power forever. Their prestige is through the roof. And they have the financial ties, not to mention the destruction of every poppy in that country, to continue to build their moral supremacy, to be honest, and to cooperate with the Chinese for rebuilding. That's the only chance this country has, not just to prosper, but to function at all.
Well, I think we predicted that sort of thing happening between Afghanistan and China a while back before America had even pulled out. Of course, China is a lot closer to Afghanistan than America. There's also been this earthquake that's recently happened, and we really haven't heard much about it on the Western news. Two of Afghanistan's provinces on the border with Pakistan, Khost and Paktika, were struck by a 6.1 magnitude earthquake on June the 22nd. Initial reports put the death toll at 700, with twice that many injured. China has responded to the Afghanistan quake by announcing 50 million yuan, or $7.5 million, worth of aid. The videos and photos show the People's Liberation Army Air Force airlifting some of the aid into the Kabul airport. The U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, said it had sent $55 million worth of aid, including emergency supplies to Afghanistan quake victims. The aid had to be routed through partner organizations such as the IOM, as Washington does not recognize the Taliban government, however. Friday's needling by Zhao is not the first time the Chinese Foreign Ministry's spokesman has mocked the US over Afghanistan. In September last year, about a week after the last US troops left the country, he posted a video of the Taliban playing around in the wreckage of an American-made plane captioned "The Graveyard of Empires." So, I mean, looking at this, you could say, well, America has sent almost 10 times as much aid over there than in China. So what's going on here? But of course, it says that it's having to be routed through partner organizations. I've got a suspicion that might mean something we'd be interested in. What's going on here, Matt?
Yeah, partner organizations, using the very vague phrase, is, of course, suspicious. All of these groups are privately owned, controlled by corporations, like the Amnesty International type of groups, which are nothing but, the front for all their corporate sponsors. They couldn't function without them. They do get government grants on occasion. So I have the feeling none of this is going to reach where it's supposed to go, nor is that really the purpose. As I said before, given the huge amount of money that the destruction that the Americans caused, and then taking every penny of that old government's reserves, simply stealing it, this is just a drop in the bucket. I mean, for the U.S., it's almost ironic and mocking for them to send a few million dollars worth of aid that will probably never get there after destroying the place. This is probably a way to enrich the private companies that this money is going through. That's the American way. It's a mocking gesture. And these pictures we're talking about, Taliban playing in the wreckage, the Taliban doesn't have an air force. And yet brought down planes all over the place, brought down helicopters all over the place, defeated the U.S. without a Navy. Well, it wouldn't be relevant. Navy wouldn't be relevant, but the Air Force. And you're right. They do have a small border with China. China thinks it has more responsibility there. And it's also, to some extent, a way to take a jab at Pakistan to rebuild a very large partner country, make a partner country out of it, which is something I don't think Pakistan is going to be very happy about. But the Taliban is a pro-Pakistan group, so there's always going to be this balance between India and Afghanistan, with Pakistan in the middle. China has been pro-Pakistan most of the time, but so it seems that this partnership between those two countries against India and against the U.S. this gets very complicated, since India is now a wild card. There's a certain level of competition. I mean, China has far more resources than Pakistan does to rebuild anything. That kind of competition can get worse, especially if India does make overtures towards China.
Well, it is really a kind of slap in the face, isn't it, after they've put a stop on the central bank? I mean, who knows how many millions of dollars there were in the central bank that it had access to, and plus also all the aid that was going into the country, that's been stopped. So they've sort of turned the spigot off and said, now you're going to have to survive on your own. And now Afghanistan has had this huge earthquake. Normally something like that would result in lots of adverts on the television for aid, but I don't think I've seen one. Well, China has also pointed out that NATO is a threat to world peace. The US and its NATO allies have undermined world peace by triggering conflicts and starting wars, serving Washington's selfish interests at the expense of innocent civilians around the globe, China's foreign ministry has claimed. The history of NATO is one about creating conflicts and waging wars, arbitrarily launching wars and killing innocent civilians, even to this day, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhao Lijian told reporters on Wednesday. Facts have proven that it isn't China that poses a systemic challenge to NATO. Instead, it is NATO that brings a looming systemic challenge to world peace and security. Very well said. They do seem to be getting a lot more courageous recently, the Chinese, in calling out what's really going on. What do you make of this Zhao Lijian, Matt?
Well, it's, you know, he said these kind of things before. They have been, I mean, China's been saying this kind of stuff for a long time. And like you see in Russia, the foreign ministry tends to be a bit more militant than the chief executive. You know, the U.S. is in the process of trying to build this Asian NATO on the one hand, which really includes mostly white countries, you know, Australia, New Zealand. Well, China is going from, you know, their ally in Pakistan to Afghanistan to Iran, all allied countries. Huge, extremely powerful allied countries. You know, so India's not too upset about that, but India's moving towards them anyway. So just the very beginning here, this is a huge defeat for the West, and the Chinese are well aware of it. Now, my only problem is if they discover – if there's more minerals, because that's what Afghanistan is very wealthy with minerals. If they start – Chinese start digging and start making a fortune out of this, what the U.S. reaction is going to be. I'm not 100% sure the U.S. is finished with Afghanistan. The other chance they have of rebuilding is their tremendous mineral wealth. It's like Kosovo. And so when China is already starting to dig, rebuild the economy just from that, and of course NATO isn't going to stop. NATO is not going to take this lying down, and wherever they go, they cause destruction and warfare. And as I said before, they steal the reserves of any country they don't like, and they're supposed to be trusted. So the Chinese are understating the problem here. They are, when they say systemic, the term means that it's not just these countries and the military. It's the economic elites, the political elites, and the ideological elites who want to go and remake these countries for, you know, a global homo organization. So that's what he means by systemic or systematic. It's not just a military issue. Every agency of power is involved here. So I'll say again, I'm not sure the U.S. is finished. When the minerals start being dug up, U.S. not going to be able to resist. We'll see what NATO does then.
So it's the progressive liberal ideology that comes as well when NATO moves into an area. Zhao made his comments 1 week after NATO, for the first time, singled China out as a strategic priority and a challenge to Western interests. China is substantially building up its military forces, including nuclear weapons, bullying its neighbours, threatening Taiwan, monitoring and controlling its own citizens through advanced technology and spreading Russian lies and disinformation, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said last Wednesday. Tensions between NATO and China have escalated since Russia launched its military offensive against the Ukraine in February. Beijing, which has declined to join in the US-led campaign to punish and isolate Russia over the conflict, has suggested that NATO provoked the crisis. At last week's NATO summit in Spain, US Secretary of State Antony Blinken accused China of seeking to undermine the rules-based international order. Zhao responded on Wednesday by saying the so-called rules-based international order is actually a family rule made by a handful of countries to serve the US self-interest. The US observes international rules only as it sees fit, he added. And it has sought through NATO to hype up competition with China and stoke group confrontation. The latest back and forth between Washington and Beijing comes just days before Blinken is scheduled to meet with Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi. The two chief envoys are slated to talk on Saturday when foreign ministers gather at the G20 summit in Indonesia. So we've got a couple of bits here. We've got NATO that is really starting to rattle sabers against China, and it's pointing out this problem with Taiwan. But it's basically criticizing China for the way that it treats its own people, not for wanting to invade other countries or take over other countries, which is essentially what NATO does. What do you make of this back and forth that they're having here, Matt?
This is one of the worst cases of neurotic projection that I have ever come across. All the NATO Secretary Generals did is list everything that NATO and the U.S. does every single day and just project it onto China. I mean, building up its military forces. Well, NATO can't say that for anybody. That's all they do, including nuclear weapons. Well, the U.S. is the one that pulled out of the START treaties because it wants to build more of them. Bullying its neighbors, I guess he means Taiwan. But it was the U.S. who pulled Taiwan out of the U.N. and put Peking in its place. See, that was at a time where Marxism was fashionable in the West, and the nationalists and military who ran Taiwan at the time were unfashionable. Almost the same thing happened with South Korea. But monitoring and controlling its own citizens through advanced technology created in the West, I'm sure. But how anyone can see how people are treated in the West who have cameras everywhere, everything is tracked through credit cards or your social security number or what taxpayer number, for them to say this. And of course, the big sin is defending Russia throughout all of this. This is I'm not saying projection as an insult or a way to attack. It's a simple psychological fact here. I've always said this. But by the way, it isn't the first time that the Defense Department talked about China as a top priority. We've had whole shows here, probably more than one, where we read through the U.S. strategic concept, which is its doctrine on foreign policy officially put out by the Pentagon. And China is always listed as a major priority because it's – and we've already talked about this too, how the Biden administration, people who control it, have said that this is about the war has to continue, the protectionism has to continue, sanctions have to continue everywhere, even at a huge cost to the Western economy, because Russia and China are the threat to the liberal world order, which is the exact phrase that they used, which is a phrase that we used all the time. So that's really, they fully admitted what this is all about. Russia and China and all of their many allies are making it more and more difficult for the U.S. to simply steal and steal and steal, which we'd already talked about. I mean, I keep forgetting in Libya, they took $40 billion in reserves out of it, which was a huge part of why they were at war with them. That's at the root of what's going on here. Overthrowing the Russian government would mean being able to steal a trillion dollars worth of gold and reserves and numerous currencies. So this is probably one of the only ways the U.S. keeps its stock market afloat. But it is a rules-based international order. Well, the U.S. pulls out of every treaty, steals anything that isn't nailed down, promotes a drug trade in Afghanistan, on and on and on and on. This is really hard to read. This is really hard to read.
No, I find it interesting that NATO wants to highlight this monitoring and controlling its citizens through advanced technology. I mean, that's referring to China's social credit system, isn't it, that rewards people and prevents people from being able to conduct business transactions if they've been badly behaved. And of course, we look at that and think, well, that's controlling their behavior. But it rewards them for being patriotic. It doesn't punish them for hate speech. It rewards them for being patriotic and limits the money that they're able to get and the transactions they're able to do if they're being antisocial. I think people like ourselves, Matt, they're taking interest in society and what's going on. I think we're the sort of people that would be rewarded in China through the social credit system, particularly for highlighting problems with policies with things such as multiculturalism. Getting back to these articles here, China believes NATO should have been dissolved after the USSR, which it was created to contain and now no longer exists, the foreign ministry explained. Spokesman Zhao Lijian lamented the fact that instead the US-led military bloc expanded and cornered Russia, eventually triggering the present bloodshed in Ukraine. As a product of the Cold War, NATO should have become history when the Soviet Union disintegrated. he said during a daily press conference in April, when asked about remarks on NATO's role as a US geopolitical tool made by his Russian counterpart Maria Zakharova. Zhao said that NATO expanded eastwards in Europe for decades in violation of the promises made to the Soviet leadership. This pushed Russia into a corner step by step. So ultimately, NATO was the initiator and biggest promoter of the Ukraine crisis on behalf of the US, he stated, adding that the organization should reflect on what exactly it contributes to European security. Moscow cited the threat posed by NATO's creeping expansion into Ukraine as the key reason why it attacked the country in late February. Beijing agreed with the justification, even as it criticized the use of military force as the method of resolving the situation. China has repeatedly accused Western nations of escalating tensions with Russia, saying their refusal to address Moscow's legitimate security concerns was the cause of the crisis. It has refused to join in with the sanctions on Russia, calling them illegal and incapable of resolving problems. The US and its allies accused China of being on the wrong side of history in Ukraine, threatening Beijing with punishment should it support the Russian military campaign. Moscow attacked the neighboring state following Ukraine's failure to implement the terms of the Minsk agreements signed in 2014 and Russia's eventual recognition of the Donbass republics in Donetsk and Luhansk. The German and French brokered Minsk protocol was designed to regularize the status of the regions within the Ukrainian state. Russia has now demanded that Ukraine officially declare itself a neutral country that will never join the US-led NATO military bloc. Kiev insists the Russian offensive was completely unprovoked and has denied claims that it was planning to retake the two republics by force. Well, all you have to look at is the rhetoric to see that there were plans to even go into Crimea, wasn't there? That was the thing. There were plans to attack Russian territory because Crimea is now a part of Russia. So this is quite insightful what China is saying here, Matt. I mean, this explains why NATO is now openly speaking about being against China, doesn't it? Because China are fully backing Russia in this, apart from joining them militarily. But they are giving their full philosophical and political backing, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, how many shows have we done over the last few years talking about the Russo-Chinese alliance and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization? Moscow and Peking have tightly intertwined economies. China is dependent on Russia for its energy, for a lot of manufactured goods, for a lot of raw materials, gas pipeline technology. And because you have two state-run oil firms, or at least state-controlled oil firms in both countries, the profit motive isn't the only thing. It actually, it has to immediately respond, answer to the state and answer to the party. That's a big deal. That's one of the reasons that the two countries' policies are so different from the West. But what the Chinese government is saying here is, I don't know how you could disagree with it. They might as well say the sky is blue. Of course. I mean, the U.S. rhetoric, as you said, has been talking about destroying Russia. I had an article called The U.S. Declares War on Russia. That was from 2003. And these sanctions, everything else, how could China possibly – even if somehow it was overthrown tomorrow and the U.S. installed somebody, it still couldn't engage in any kind of sanctions. But as we all know, all the Standard & Poor's and Moody's and all the rating agencies are backing down, saying that they used to say that the Russian economy is going to decrease by 25%. Same thing's being done against China. Same thing. They're in a crisis. Again, more projection. And not only has none of this happened, but these sanctions on Russia have strengthened the ruble, forced them to rebuild what they should have done a long time ago, further ties with the Chinese and the Indians, which is a big coup, and Indonesia, which is a country that in terms of Indonesian-Russian relations, no one really talks about, and getting their own banking system in order, getting their credit card processors in order. This really hasn't hurt them. If anything, it's assisted them. I just came across a poll. I forget who did it. Public opinion research, I think, said 90% of Russians don't believe that the sanctions have affected their day-to-day life. And in fact, all kinds of new opportunities are developing. See, if you pull a foreign company out of your country, all that means now you have a huge market opening for a Russian company to go in there. And these sanctions are just more simply, you know, the U.S. can't do anything. They're a paper tiger. They really can't do much. They did try to steal a lot of Russian reserves abroad, but that's not really a problem when you have huge commodity prices now, and an economy in the West heading towards or is in depression, while Russia and China, despite all of the predictions, are actually growing. There's really no debt. They're creditor countries, and because a lot of countries are accepting the ruble or going along with Russia and paying with rubles, the demand for that is always going to go. And anything that the West does to either one of these countries hurts them and actually helps the Russo-Chinese alliance. You know, what does Russia need banks for from the West when it really doesn't – you know, anytime it needs to borrow for a short-term project, it goes to the BRICS bank. It goes to a Chinese bank. They just don't need the West. And the West is really bizarrely slow to get this. And BRICS alone, let alone the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the Chinese banks, Indian banks, and the Indians aren't responding to any threat from the West to engage in all of this. The West is like McDonald's leaving the country. You know, thank God that McDonald's left. They spread as much damage as missiles do. So this is just in both of those countries' favor, and the West continues to slide into increasing depression.
It's like the West has sanctioned itself. You got inflation running at about 10% in Europe at the moment, which is the result of these sanctions, which are strengthening Russia, strengthening Russia's ties with India and China, as you say. Well, moving back to Afghanistan, U.S. President Joe Biden notified Congress on Wednesday that he will formally revoke Afghanistan's status as a major non-NATO ally, almost a year after the last American soldier left the country on his orders, and the Washington-backed government in Kabul melted away before the Taliban. Biden has sent an official notice to the U.S. House of Representatives and the Senate of his intent to rescind Afghanistan's designation, the White House said, and it was not clear when the change would take effect. Afghanistan was originally designated as an MNNA under then-President Barack Obama in 2012, over a decade after the U.S. invaded and overthrew the Taliban government in Kabul, accusing it of harboring international terrorist Osama bin Laden. The designation helped Washington fully fund Kabul's military budget for years. The designation is a powerful symbol of the close relationship the U.S. shares with those countries and demonstrates our deep respect for the friendship with them, according to the State Department. While it provides some military and economic privileges, it does not entail any security commitments to the designated country. So what is this major non-NATO ally designation? What does it really mean, Matt? And what is this going to mean for Afghanistan that they are no longer seen as one of these allies?
You know, you have the most favored nation status that goes back years that, you know, meant that if you're on that list, you get cheap financing, you have totally free trade. This is supposed to be something like that without any real teeth to it. It's a symbol. It's a gold star on a kid's paper. It's a pat on the head. It doesn't mean much. And more significantly, as I said before, it shows that once the U.S. sucks everything it can out of a country, destroying it, leaving it in rubble, they then say, "Because well, we don't like this government, we're gonna, you know, we have no contact with you anymore." But these aren't sanctions. These aren't withdrawing diplomatic relations, since they don't accept the Taliban government. This should have been done actually a long time ago, as far as Washington was concerned. So, and this whole thing is laughable. They didn't have Osama bin Laden there. He had died much earlier than that. That whole thing is one big Johnson's Law myth here. But like it says, it's a powerful symbol. And that's all it is. It says, okay, we won't invade you anymore, or something like that. And financing the entire Kabul military budget. And of course, they collapsed the minute the U.S. pulled out. They collapsed entirely. They had no popularity. They had no legitimacy. They were all Americans. They were all educated in America, had their holdings in America and the West. Of course, they had no support. We've talked about, we've joked about what the Afghanistan National Army was like, getting all the drug addicts from the cities. You know, they don't have a job, so this is what they do. That's all NATO was. That's all the U.S. was there. And what this means is, like I say, prior to the discovery of or the digging of for more minerals, this is saying we're done with you. There's nothing more to steal, so we can cut you off.
A total of 20 countries and territories, including Taiwan, an island China considers to be its rightful territory, have been formally or informally granted this status since the category was created in 1987. Among the benefits the designated countries can expect are the ability to buy surplus US weapons and ammunition, use US financing to buy or lease military equipment, access to maintenance contracts, and the ability to join Pentagon research projects on a shared cost basis. Biden's decision to revoke Afghanistan's status isn't surprising as much as it is overdue. The last US soldier left Afghanistan on August 30th, 2021, with the country firmly in Taliban hands by that point. The US-backed government had effectively surrendered Kabul to the Taliban 2 weeks prior, resulting in the planned departure of US troops turning into a mass evacuation involving diplomats, Western nationals, and over 100,000 Afghans who managed to get to the airport. Washington has refused to recognize the new government and has since frozen and partly confiscated the Afghan central bank assets in its possession. So this is a thing. They've just taken all the central bank's assets, frozen the funds, and then given them a little bit back because they've had this earthquake, and then taken away their most favoured ally status. It's interesting they include Taiwan here, Matt. We don't often hear about Taiwan in this part of the world, but I know you do over there in America. Why has America got this interest in Taiwan?
For no other reason than it's a pretext for a war or increasing sanctions on China. Under the Carter administration, I think I already mentioned this, because Marxism, especially Chinese Marxism, was so fashionable, they ditched Taiwan and brought their recognition to mainland China, putting mainland China on the Security Council of the UN, not Taiwan, which at the time was a bad thing because, of course, it supported the post-Mao Chinese order and hurt what was a nationalist military government in Taiwan. Those days are long gone. Now it's just a liberal democracy, which is a shadow of its former self in Taiwan, and so that's why, they've shifted their focus. Taiwan is armed to the teeth. There's no question. They get supplies from many countries. Israel is actually a big financier of theirs. Chinese have said, you know, we're not ruling out the use of force here. But going back to this, most favored or this major non-NATO ally, most of these so-called benefits exist whether you have that designation or not. All of this, you know, the Pentagon is not going to work with someone who's not going to pay it on a cost basis. Most of these things exist for a lot of countries, in countries in Africa and countries in Asia. Only direct enemies are deprived of this. So this is really, again, this is purely a symbol. You know, Boeing is not going to not sell weaponry to a country just because they're not on this list. That's not how it works. But the author is right to say, why did it take so long? And I think the reason is they were hoping that someone would pressure them, that they would reform themselves, that they would become more liberal. And when that didn't happen, they did this purely symbolic act. There's not much more you can do to Afghanistan. There's not much more destruction without now going to war with Pakistan or China or both. Pakistan may, as I said, may well be the next flashpoint for the West, and may even have India and Pakistan working together like they do in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. So, but all in all, the defeat of the U.S. there emboldened everybody. It shows what we've been saying, that the U.S. is a paper tiger. It doesn't have the forces or the will or even the money to fight in a group of what amounts to goat herders with makeshift weapons and no air force, which is not even helicopters. They're extremely – and of course they poured cash into the Kabul government, but there was no interest in – it's like Ukraine. There's no one there who knows how to use it, and you know, most of the officer corps are extremely compromised. These 100,000 Afghanistans who managed to get to the airport, these are people who lived in the capital city, who were close to this colonial administration and probably heavily involved in the drug trade. So they had the hope to Allah that they'd get the heck out of there. No one fled the Taliban unless you already had ties with the U.S. in the capital city.
Well, I guess this is probably what happens to most favored NATO allies. They end up having all their funds seized when they decide that they don't want to be NATO allies any longer. We've seen the same thing happen with Libya, haven't we? All the funds were seized there, and in Russia, they tried to seize the funds and put a stop on the bank there. I mean, who does America think it is when it can just seize all the wealth of a country that it decides that it doesn't like the administration that the country wants? As you pointed out, Matt, the Taliban have popular support. They have legitimacy. They are the Afghan government. And sooner or later, America will have to end up dealing with them. And it's a great shame that they've just had this earthquake that they now have to deal with on top of everything else. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk Radio for the nationalist community.